That of the Thracians was equally beautiful. When we had finished our prayers and seen the show, we headed in the direction of the city. Polemarchus, Kephla's son, caught sight of us from a distance and told his servant to run and ask us to wait for him. The servant grabbed my cloak from behind and said that Polemarchus wanted us to wait. I turned around and asked him where his master was. He said that he was on his way and that we should wait for him. In a few minutes, Polemarchus arrived, along with Adimantus, Glaucon's brother, and Nicaratus, the son of Nicias, and several others who had probably been at the procession.
Socrates, I see that you're already on your way back to the city.
That's right.
But do you see how many we are?
Of course.
Are you stronger than all of us? If not, you'll have to stay where you are.
Isn't there another alternative? Perhaps we could persuade you to let us go.
Can you persuade us if we refuse to listen?
No way.
We're not going to listen, you can be sure of that. Haven't you heard about the torch race in honor of the goddess that will take place this evening? It's on horseback.
On horseback? That's something new. Will they carry torches and pass them to each other during the race?
That's it. Not only that, but there'll be an all-night festival that you definitely ought to see. After supper, we'll go to the festival. Other young men will meet us, and we'll have a good talk. So stay. Don't be stubborn.
Since you insist, it looks like we'll have to stay.
So, we went with Polemarchus to his house, where we found his brothers, Lysias and Euthydemus, along with Thrasymachus from Chalcedon, Charimantides from Paeania, and Clitophon, the son of Aristonymus. Polemarchus' father, Cephalus, was also there. I had not seen him for a long time, and now he seemed to be a very old man. He was seated on a cushioned chair and had a wreath on his head because he had been sacrificing in the courtyard. We sat on chairs arranged around him in a semicircle.
Greetings, Socrates. You don't come to see me as often as you should. If I were still able to visit you, I would not ask you to come here. But at my age, I can hardly get to the city, so you should come more often to the Piraeus. I want you to know that as my bodily pleasures decay, my delight in good conversation increases by the same amount. Do not deny my request. Make our house your resort, and keep company with these young men. We are old friends, and you will be quite at home with us.
There is nothing I like better, Cephalus, than talking with people your age. I regard them as travelers who have made a trip that I may make one day. I can ask them whether the road is smooth and easy or rugged and difficult. This is a question which I especially want to ask you now that you have arrived at what poets call the threshold of old age. Is life more difficult toward the end? What do you have to report?
Socrates, I will tell you how I feel about it. Men of my age flock together. We are birds of a feather, as the old proverb says. At our meetings, most of my friends are full of complaints. I cannot eat. I cannot drink. I cannot... Well, the pleasures of youth and love are fled away. Once we had good times, but now all that is gone, and life is no longer life. Some complain that their relatives have neglected them. This gets them going on a litany of evils, of which old age is the cause. But to me, Socrates, these complainers seem to blame something that is not really the problem. If old age were the cause, I and every other old man would feel as they do. But this is not my own experience, nor that of others I have known. I remember well the words of the poet Sophocles. When he was an old man, someone asked, "How does love fit with age, Sophocles? Are you still the man you were?" He replied, "Be quiet. I am happy to be free of all that. I feel as if I had escaped from a deranged and raging master." His answer sounds even better to me now than it did then.